Welcome to WJR's Internet Advisor Podcast. Catch the live show weekends on News Talk 760 WJR and online at internetadvisor.net. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at internetadvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Thank you so much for making your way to the Internet Advisor. Yes, you see, we're still on the air. That's right. I'm Foster Brown. And with me in studio today, we have Gary Baker and Kel Carson. And we're going to be talking about some of the top items that are in the news today, technology news throughout the weekend. We'll also, in our second hour, be answering some of your questions that you've been sending in to us. And by the way, don't forget, simply go to our homepage and hit the Contact Us button, fill in that email request, and get those questions to us. Back in just a moment. Glad that you stopped by to say hello to us here on the Internet Advisor. I kind of chuckle about that because you made a very special point of downloading our podcast from our homepage at internetadvisor.net, or what you've done is you've subscribed to our podcast. And that's probably some of the best ways of doing it. Great applications out there for making sure that you're keeping up with all of your favorite podcasts. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about that during our program today, and I'll pull my fellow members of our board of brilliance here, the Genius Bar, our very own Genius Bar, Mr. Gary Baker.
I think there's somebody else has claimed that term help the their public get to them. So
but,
I don't know who that would be.
But
Cal,
now,
would you know who that would be?
I'm sure.
There you go. The microphones would help.
I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Different microphone. Yeah.
The right microphone. That's
you know, when you're used to sitting in position two,
you
move up to position one, yes, because the handsome and ever popular Ed Rudell is taking the day off today.
Who let him have the day off?
I don't know, but he should have told me I needed to move over a chair. Oh, that was like
dear.
Too crazy.
I tell you, when we get the video version of this, folks, first of all, we may just blank the whole thing out anyway.
Yeah, we better not get a video.
But representing the Genius Bar from Apple here is Mr. Kel Carson.
Well, not necessarily representing the bar
I'm teasing.
But I'd like to raise the bar.
Oh,
it's not too hard to do on this show, I'll tell you.
Exactly.
Step into the bar and raise a few. What the heck? But in any case, this is the rather this crazy crew that's in here today. This is going to be, I think, a wild program.
We're going to have fun.
Yeah, we're pulling rabbits out of hats. But anyway, it's been just a wild week, at least for me, and this is like the perfect culmination of a perfect storm of insanity this week. But what have you guys seen out there online that is of interest to you,
well,
or you think is really earth-shaking?
For 42 million people, the T-Mobile Metro PCS merger, right? I think that's a number after they merge. Subscribers.
Oh, after they put them all together.
Yeah, the subscribers to T-Mobile and Metro PCS. So I don't know what this merger might do. They're going to go under the brand name T-Mobile, which is, I think, the stronger brand name. And then the technology is pretty solid. I think they run on the Sprint network. I don't know how much different it's going to be
Metro PCS runs on the Sprint network,
T-Mobile is. That's right. So they'll have to move then.
So hard to keep these players. Wait a minute, guys. I have also heard that there's now at least Sprint is weighing the possibility of getting into the game again. Didn't they? At one time, they were the ones who were stepping up and saying,
we're going to put an offer in. And I think they did put an offer, but it wasn't high enough.
I don't think it was enough, obviously,
But they may come back.
That's the deal. That is the issue right now.
I don't know if that's binding I don't know much about
it. Well, if they do, one of the things I heard is that it's going to cost Metro PCS like $105 million. In other words, there's a penalty with these merger kind of things. Is if you step out of the deal, honey, you don't want to dance with me, it's going to cost you.
And, of course, Sprint would have to pay that as well on top of their...
Who was it that had to cough that up recently? They had a cough up. Oh, shoot. I'm forgetting it now. It was a deal that went south that did not happen, and as a result, the other partner picked up a huge amount of money. Anyway, it's just, I remember that, but I don't remember the exact partners.
Well, the really good thing about it is that if the deal does go through,
yes,
for once, we'll have what I would call a low-cost cellular provider with high-line equipment.
Now, that is interesting.
And that's true.
And it will take MetroPCS. It will allow MetroPCS to, or their customers, the value of being able to then travel out of their metro areas. And in some ways, hasn't that been the genius of MetroPCS that for less money, you can get a pretty decent signal? For instance, we happen to be in the Detroit metropolitan area. It may be, you know, wherever else that they happen to be in those markets.
Where they're good, they're good.
Yeah, that's good.
But they're not everywhere.
For instance, I have a grandson who has, pretty limited income. Well, in fact, he went back to school, so he doesn't have a whole lot of money. But for him, MetroPCS was great because it was a given amount of money. And when he ran out of that money, click, the phone went off. And that's how he knew he had spent too much on beer and not enough on phone.
But they had a business model that worked really well.
Yes.
I mean, they were nationwide, but they weren't nationwide.
Right.
You bought for your particular area when they initially started. So if you never really traveled that much and you were always going to stay in, let's say, the Tri-County area in this area, it was excellent for you. It was very, very good, especially if you had, you know, children that needed cell phone service.
Right.
But you didn't want to, like, put a big wad of money out for one. And for number two, you didn't have to worry about, oh, my God, they're going to run my bill up into the heavens somewhere where you could set them up on a plan. It's like, just like you said, you get X amount of time, and when you're done, done. So that sort of thing is really good, and I'm looking forward to the fact that these two may get together because, like I said, they're going to bring low-cost cellular service with high-quality phone.
That is a very good and very interesting combination, and I think for people, you know, the other thing I've been seeing recently, and I want, you know, MetroPCS have been kind of stepping up the models of phones that they were making available to their clients that they had not been able to do in the past. And again, I'm only gauging from what my grandson was using, and it was, you know, kind of sometimes pretty clunky kind of stuff. It was the lower end of, let's say, Samsung's line or whoever, Pantech or whoever it was. You were getting the lower rung.
Yes.
You weren't getting a lot of bells and whistles, right?
Exactly.
And but people were happy with that because, hey, I'm paying a little bit of money for a little better phone, but now it could be a whole lot better. Let's take a pause. When we come back in just a minute, our panel here is going to keep on talking about this and some of the other big news that's going on there in the digital world, the headlines that are out there. My name is Foster Brown. Thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. We'll be back with you in a flash. So glad that you have come here and enjoying the Internet Advisor with us. You know, I mentioned at the head of the program that there are a lot of people who listen to us through podcasts and downloads, but there's a whole bunch of you as well who listen to us over the Michigan Talk Network. And we would like to greet our folks out there in a couple of cities who are listening to us, WKMI AM 1360 in Kalamazoo, listen to us on Sundays, and the folks out in Muskegon, a little further northwest on the shores of beautiful Lake Michigan, WKLQ AM 1490 in Muskegon. Thanks for joining us, whether it's on Saturday night, at the times that we normally are live when we're on our flagship station in Detroit, and also on Sundays from noon until 2 p.m. Delighted to have you folks joining us along.
Do they have kangaroos in Kalamazoo?
I don't kangaroo. If there's a zoo, oh, zoo, Kalamazoo. I don't know. There's got to be a zoo there. They had a beautiful zoo, I think, I was going to say Muskegon. I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure of that.
Yeah, so we could talk about technology.
Yeah, let's go back.
Yeah.
You almost did it. You almost did it.
Did what?
Derailed us completely.
Oh, we would have got back here. You know that.
I just wanted to fit. I found out, I know I had a little momentary brain lapse there. We talked about, and there were probably some people listening to this saying, it was AT&T's touch. They were trying to buy T-Mobile last, and that was the one where they backed out afterwards. I mean, it fell through, and it ended up in a big payment to T-Mobile. They, I think, walked away with a good deal of money because they didn't. I think it was the way it was. Wasn't that the way it worked? But in any case, they were the ones who were trying to buy T-Mobile, and it collapsed last year. And now it looks like Sprint, which is the third largest, may also dig back in and say, yeah, that's us.
Okay, so
enough of that.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I just downloaded and started to use SkyDrive by Microsoft.
Oh.
Very similar to Google Drive or the predecessor of all of them, Dropbox, or and then Box is, I guess, the fourth, the
well,
fourth
Apple's,
one in.
Apple's right? also had the iCloud, right? Now, that and would, then, would that be along those lines?
And the iCloud, yeah, probably. It's different
okay.
because of the way the Dropbox and drives are set up. But I, have you guys so I've used Dropbox, and I think that's great. I like SkyDrive from what I can tell.
I have I know it's there. I have the old Hotmail account, uh-huh. which was shifted over. So as a result of that, I got some storage on SkyDrive that I've never really used because I just have not examined that. And to be honest with you, I too had used Dropbox for most of those kind right. of things.
Dropbox just works so darn good.
Yeah, it does. I mean,
they have made it about seamless.
It's just about. I mean, and it works on every one of my devices, and I can sync things on it, and it just works for me. I love Dropbox. I think two reasons why I haven't tried SkyDrive is, number one, Dropbox has been doing so well for me that I didn't have a need for another choice, but so I should probably look at it anyway. And the second thing that scared me a little bit about SkyDrive was it was associated with my Hotmail account. And unfortunately, my Hotmail account is just a breeding ground for spam.
Mm. You know, it has nothing to do with Hotmail, though.
Good.
Well, no, wait. That didn't the Hotmail became Live Mail?
It doesn't have anything to
they're
do
two
with the
separate,
mail.
They're two
oh,
separate
oh,
services.
Oh, oh, oh,
well,
okay.
And it doesn't matter about either one of them because this is called SkyDrive,
yeah.
and it's just a Dropbox. It has nothing to do with the email, your email address. So what I did was, okay. in typical fashion, both Google and to get Google Drive, you have to have a Gmail account, but you don't have to use it.
Right.
You just
right.
have to use it to sign in the first time, and then I associate my other, either Gary at internetadvisor.net account or another account that I might use.
You do that. You aggregate and, all of yours through Gmail then?
No.
Oh,
of course not.
No.
Okay. Nor would I ever do it with Hotmail either, but I do it with, you know, with Gary at GaryEBaker.com,
okay.
right?
Okay.
You know, you have to have a Gmail account to set up Google Drive. You have to have a
right.
Live Mail account, either Hotmail or Live Mail, either one, doesn't matter.
Okay.
To set up your SkyDrive, but then I just associate whatever email account I want to with it, and I never use...
Would you explain the word associate? Because I know there are some people who are listening who wonder what that means.
Okay. That just means you get on, you sign up with your Live Mail account or your Hotmail account, and then it says, what email account do you want to use with SkyDrive? And I just say
gotcha.
Gary at GaryEBaker.com,
okay.
and I never have to remember the other one again.
Okay,
wow,
so so you say to him, well, explain what associate means. And that's fine. I like that. So what does this aggregate mean? Because that one was even worse than associate.
I can just pull everything I want to into one account.
Okay, right? so you go one place and you see the mail that's come from all those other emails.
Yeah, and I don't even use the other email.
Okay, right.
I don't aggregate the mail.
Right.
Anybody that sends anything to my Live Mail account or my Gmail account, it's probably just sitting there unanswered.
Okay, but what you can do now,
because I never use it. Has it, got it because of some sort of spam.
Ah, okay.
Right.
Because you can actually pick an account with, like, the SkyDrive, for instance, and you can say, pick my A, B, and C. Let's say people have two addresses out there. Maybe it's an old Yahoo account or it's a Gmail account, and just send the mail from there to Live Mail now. So I will only have to go to one place. And I'll see the mail then that comes from all of those different places.
You can.
That's called aggregating or associating.
But
right?
What does that mail have to do with your storage?
Nothing to do.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. But you know, here's the other thing I wanted to ask you about SkyDrive, and maybe you know something. I'm going to take a look at it probably next week and see how it works for myself. With Dropbox, I can actually mount that folder on my machine and be able to put things in.
Now you're going to have to see what mount means.
Is that fair play.
And
you can do the same. I think they all operate the same.
Yeah. Yeah. What mount means is that on my Mac, I can, quote, in Windows words, map the drive through the Finder so I'd be able to find it and see it with the rest of my folders on my computer and be able to put things in it.
So basically you connect it to...
See,
I'm sorry.
You put, see, right here. See, if you look
right
here.
Everybody on the radio, look right there where Gary's pointing.
Look at your radio closely.
So actually, you know, under my libraries or under my drives, right, it just shows up as a new drive.
It shows up as a new drive.
It's
okay.
SkyDrive. It doesn't have to use one of my letters or my, you know, it's just like a SharePoint site. I have SharePoint sites at work, and I just mount those onto
my
drives.
I connect them. That's a it's a fancy word, folks, for connect. But the neat thing
about
that is
you don't
it shows
have
up.
To think about it because it automatically does.
So then, Cal, what happens after you mount or connect this on your computer?
And you don't do it. It automatically is done for you. So you don't have to even know that.
Once it's connected, then all the stuff that's there shows up there?
Well, once I have it connected there, whatever I have on that drive up in the cloud, I'll be able to see just like another folder on my computer, just like if it was on the C drive or the internal drive to the computer. Conversely, if I want to move something over there, I can just drag and drop it right into that folder.
That has been the genius of Dropbox, hasn't
it? Right.
Because, for instance, they created an application which essentially was mounted on my Mac where I simply would open up that folder and then take whatever things I wanted, a picture or a document, drop it in the appropriate file on Dropbox, and zoom, it would gradually be put up there.
It's just like a USB drive that you might slide into a USB connection, right? And it shows up, and it says, here's my USB external removable drive. And you can just drag and drop back and forth between that and any other drive you have on the system. The difference is with Google Drive, SkyDrive, Dropbox, and Box, those are the four biggies, instead of physically on your machine, it's in the cloud.
Now, and that is a big key.
And they're all free.
Now, I've been taking some time on this, folks, because I think for some of you, this is a whole new concept because you think of, you know, as Gary, as you said, putting a USB stick, for instance, into the slot on your computer, and then you can take the information off of there, put it on your computer, or conversely, take things off your computer and put it on there. And you have a physical device that it's on. Okay, well and good. What this new step is now for all of us is that we have these resources very often free. How many gigabytes is it?
Seven.
7 gigabytes in SkyDrive.
Five
in Dropbox. But you can gain
Dropbox.
More.
And I have been over there. If you share it with people. And then there are other services as well. So we're going to take a quick pause. When we come back, I want to talk with you about some new things that Microsoft is doing with the new version of Office that will make people with Macs and PCs smile. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Cal Carson kind of discussing some things that we think are going to be some pretty significant things for a lot of us in terms of how we deal with our computers. For a lot of years, the whole notion of having a huge hard drive and bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, and Gary, you and I have been doing this for almost 15 years now. And Cal, I mean, we've all been around the business, you know, for probably 20 or more years, Gary more than that, and Cal, I'm certain you as well, me back into the late 80s. But the point is that it was always kind of this march of getting a bigger and bigger hard drives because we needed more and more storage space on our computers. And now that is shifting, folks. And I think that's the significance of our last conversation, which was that now through a lot of these services, they're trying to give it away, you know, that there are getting these storage spaces, which are in the cloud, if you will. And what I want to do is talk a little bit more about that as we go on in our program and just a little bit. But we have an opportunity right now to talk with somebody who has joined us in our studios. That you may have seen about on our homepage. His name is Rupesh Srivastava. I hope I haven't destroyed that name. But we're going to be talking with him just about something called TICON, in particular TICON Midwest, which will be taking place, depending on when you're listening to this, on October the 11th through the 12th in Novi at the Novi Sheraton. What's significant about that is that it's about, and I love this title, Entrepreneurship for Economic Empowerment. And in order to find out more about that whole experience of TICON and what the folks there plan on helping us to this area of Michigan to do is somebody who has been committed to this area and has got his own business that is doing very well, thank you, that is YoungSoft Incorporated. And again, we have with us in studio Rupesh Srivastava. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And I didn't murder the name too badly.
No, absolutely. You are right on.
Thank you. I'm glad that I was able to get that.
Thank
now,
you.
First of all, In order for people to be able to understand maybe a little better scope, what is the TICON, to start with that?
So TICON is an yearly event. It's a yearly conference which, you know, TAI organizes almost every year. Mm-hmm. We didn't do last year, but it's an yearly two-day big conference for TAI.
And what is TAI? That's the, I think, the, maybe what people are listening to this is, okay, what is that? And because I see that it's around the world.
Absolutely. So TAI is one of the biggest entrepreneurial organization in the world. It has 62 chapters, almost 20 chapters all here in U.S. It was started in Silicon Valley 20-some years back, and it has really expanded to a lot of major cities, promoting entrepreneurship. It stands for Talent Idea Enterprise.
I love it.
So basically tap into talent, take their ideas, and make them all the resources available to create the enterprise.
So the idea is to take that talent with their ideas and plug them in so they can get, going and make that happen. And Gary, you were involved, as a matter of fact.
I spoke there a few years ago. A wonderful organization, a great conference. So it brings out a lot of people that sometimes don't come out to other conferences, because it does focus a little bit on the newer companies, the entrepreneurial companies, and they're busy, aren't they?
Absolutely. And in fact, the biggest advantage of TAI is the great ecosystem TAI has created. Mm. And because of that, you know, it's a lot easier to arrange a conference like that and get, you know, a lot of good speakers, obviously, from the industry, and then get them along with the entrepreneurs who need you know, to listen to their success stories, and also have organizations like MEDC, Detroit Chamber, who are also on the same mission, have them involved with TAI. And I'm very thankful to them for supporting TAICON.
We should get that alphabet soup out there for folks. MEDC, Gary, is the
Michigan Economic Development Corporation.
And they are very excited about helping to develop companies.
Absolutely.
Develop that talent. In certainly without Michigan, but I know we have people listen to us in many areas, but this is a neat thing that's happening in Michigan. What I like about this, I find exciting, is that it is really transforming this area from being, you know, simply automotive and industrial. That's still here, obviously, but it's taking a lot of those resources that were there at that time. Mm-hmm. And Gary, you've talked about this before, that the auto industry has always had an incredible IT presence because of all that goes into making a car.
Well, you know, it used to be that the automotive industry just used IT, right? They had to use IT to keep everything connected around the world for some of these very, very large companies. Mm. Lately, we've seen that more and more auto tech is starting to meet infotech, meet IT.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, even to the extent that sometimes now you can use your mobile device to do other things within the vehicle itself.
More and more,
And it becomes more of a kind of an integrated, yet be able to pull out and keep in your pocket kind of device that helps you manage some of the subsystems in the car.
Absolutely.
I'm curious, did you get your start in TAI? Well, because I know you have a company based here in Southeast Michigan.
No, I started before I got involved with TAI.
So okay,
I started
okay.
my company 15 years back before I got in person involved. But you guys are absolutely right. Not only automotive, talk about automotive, healthcare, you know, they are all so dependent on technology base right now. I mean, that's what they are looking forward for, solving their problems.
I got to tell you, just quickly,
it's every industry, right?
It's kind of funny. This MacBook Air in front of me was what rescued me from my disasters last weekend.
Sure.
My daughter, who was an emergency room doctor, bought this because it is so lightweight, and she can carry this around rather than having an armful of charts.
Mm-hmm. So if anybody has had seen our webcam, and Foster, am I going to tell your daughter's going to take
her
it back?
Don't tell her what I just did. No. Foster, it's still working. It's still
Foster
working.
Foster tossing this
just lightly, showing its light.
Yes.
But
tossing
the idea
it in the
is,
air. And anyway.
My cardiologist, for instance, when he came in to see me, was carrying one of these.
Oh, yeah.
And so many of the systems, see, that's why they call it a MacBook Air, right, Cal?
Because it goes up in the air. It just has to, should come down in your hands.
It's almost lighter than air.
But the technologies, I know that you have a company, I think it's...
My company is technology company, you know. We also have a very focused healthcare technology company. But this, again, coming back to this conference, you know, I mean, like social media. Social media is a big focus on this conference, and that's a big, industry, which is coming,
huge industry. One of our folks who's not here with us in studio today, Emily Hay, with Hay There Social Media, works with companies, very often small to mid-sized companies, helping them to connect very practically with those resources.
I mean, these days, talk about any industry, all the sales and marketing effort, the most of it is done through social media.
I know you're familiar with the Detroit area. I'm seeing stories again and again about new companies popping up here. Has Detroit become kind of a hotbed for this kind of growth, of entrepreneurial growth?
I would say yes. Detroit is. I mean, there is a lot of things being done in Detroit. I mean, Thai is one of the organizations, but we know there are many other organizations, you know, who are actually promoting and providing all the resources, especially to these kind of companies. So it is becoming hot.
Yeah. You know, necessity is the mother of invention. That's not only a saying. It's absolutely true here. And people don't have big companies that they used to work for, when they're no longer employed there, what are they going to do? They're going to start companies.
Yes.
And I think that in the end, even though that's created a lot of pain for us and a lot of our families here in Michigan and the Midwest, I think in the end it's going to be a good thing for us.
Oh, yeah. And the last thing, we are also covering actually manufacturing here, but not just traditional manufacturing. We are trying to see how the advanced and smart manufacturing is coming back to Michigan, and which is to a lot of your listeners, I would say it might be a surprise, but there is so much of smart manufacturing happening in Michigan.
What is smart manufacturing, just for the sake of our listeners?
It's basically, all the automation, new tools, because we can't compete in the labor forces that easily. That's going to take some time. So what you can do is introduce the smart and new technology, and still become competitive. So there is a lot of that happening in Michigan, a lot of initiative happening, and we are covering that up too in this conference.
I agree. With SME, are you in touch with that kind of effort that's going on as well because of...
Sure, absolutely.
The manufacturing.
The manufacturing, people think manufacturing is like their father's manufacturing, right? It's old, it's dirty. It's nothing like that.
Yeah.
Especially a lot of our members are, it's more in precision manufacturing. It's a lot of medical devices. If you stand, unless you are standing outside, everything, if you're standing inside, everything you see has been manufactured, right? Mm. And sometimes in a very clean environment, right? Mm. When all the electronics that are around us here, I mean, every one of them, you have to have a clean room to manufacture.
Wow.
The
so lots of things. This is all coming together then at the Novi Sheraton, and it's going to be going on October the 11th
and 12th.
Right?
Absolutely. So it's for the people who belong to all this industry, who want to get the ideas, want to listen to the leaders from the prospective industry. Also for the very startup companies who want to know what all resources are being made available to them.
Excellent.
It's for all of them.
Rupesh, thank you so much for joining us here.
Thank you very much.
The Internet Advisor. By the way, folks, you can go to internetadvisor.net and click on the live links we have there to ThaiCon Midwest, which is coming. And also, there's a link there to ThaiCon Detroit. And Rupesh is the president of that. Thanks again for being here. Back in just a moment to talk a little bit more about some of those great things in the cloud. This is Foster Brown, and once again, thank you very much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. And for those of you who are joining us on one of our many stations out there as part of the Michigan Talk Network, thank you for joining us. By the way, just a quick word for you folks who are listening to us on our network affiliates. You may hear us answering questions, which is what we're going to do in our second hour. And if you don't happen to be in a place where you hear the second hour of the program, simply go to internetadvisor.net and then download the podcast. And from that, you'll notice the second hour, we spend our time answering questions that people have sent in to us. And recently, we kind of, maybe perhaps a little chauvinistically, kind of figured, well, the people who have been listening to us for many years on our flagship station in Detroit, well, they will send it. But when we realize we're part of a network, and you folks who are listening to us in Muskegon and Kalamazoo and Saginaw and Grand Rapids and Lansing and places like that, you maybe have some questions as well that you'd like to get into us. We'd love to tackle those questions. And as a matter of fact, when you do have a question to send to us, we take a look at it during the week. And if it's something that happens to be urgent, we'll answer it right away and send it off to you. But then what we do is, on these times when we are taping for the network feed as we are right now, we will answer those questions, and then we'll also make them part of the second hour of our program. We'll talk about answering them then, because very often answering your question actually helps to answer a whole bunch of people's questions. So if you're in any one of those areas where you're listening to us on your favorite radio station in the Low Cities, Muskegon and Lansing, and I went through the list again. If you're listening to us on one of those stations, then here's what you do. You go onto our homepage at internetadvisor.net. And that you will see in the upper right-hand corner on that little toolbar across, it says Contact Us. Click on that. And then you'll find a form in there where you can simply put your name and your phone number after you do a little formality there, and you can put your question in, hit that send button, and it goes right directly to all of us, to Gary and to Ed and to Cal and myself, and we all pitch in various ways and try to help you solve that problem. That way, you don't have to worry about, well, you know, maybe it's a week after the program was originally aired. Don't worry about that, because through the magic of the electronics here, we're able to take those questions and then put them right on the air and get them answered, as well as sending the answer to you directly. So please do use that if you're listening to us on one of our affiliate stations. Oh, let's see, like WNEM AM 1250 in Saginaw on Sundays, or if you may be listening to us in Lansing at WJIM AM 1240 on Sundays from 2 to 4 in the afternoon. Okay? Now, guys, I'm sorry, Gary, you were going to say something.
I was just going to mention that there's a great deal of information on our website, but on the homepage of the website, under the discussion and the news around T-Mobile and Metro PCS merger, are big changes coming in Office 2013.
Yes.
And they are, and we pointed to a couple really good resources for you to start to see what they are. I contacted, I think, the best experts outside of Microsoft around Office, well, around anything Microsoft. They happen to be Microsoft's partner of the year in a four-state region, Heartland region here, and a finalist in the whole Midwest, and that's Apex Digital Solutions. Mm-hmm. And we've had them in here before.
Just recently.
I reached out to them, and they said, you know, we can't talk about the really cool stuff yet, but as soon as they can, they'd be happy to come on and talk to us. So,
get on
our site and read about this a little bit and get ready. And in a few weeks, we're going to have those guys on as soon as they're authorized or as soon as they are allowed to talk about it by Microsoft.
Yeah, this is like...
They'd love to tell us about it.
I tell you, October 2012, the Mayans may think that the world's ending, but Microsoft holds the world is just beginning, because October and November are going to be kind of make it or break months for Microsoft in the sense of a huge change going on.
Well, I don't know if it'll be a make or break. I think it'll be a make a lot or make a huge amount.
Well,
but anyway, you know, when you look at what's coming out with Windows 8,
yes,
and then the Office 2013 Office Suite. And what they're doing by taking all of that to the cloud with Office 365.
We were just talking about that a little bit earlier on. Yeah.
And the pricing that they're giving people is just amazing.
And
apps in the cloud,
to
be able to use them on all the different devices that you might own.
Yep.
It's amazing. And we haven't even mentioned what I think it might be the coolest thing they're coming out with, which is they've tried tablets before. A lot of companies have tried tablets before. They're coming out with a new tablet, and this one, I think, is going to make it.
The Surface.
And may make it big, the Surface. So we're going to talk about that in a few weeks.
Yeah, this is all unfolding, and probably will start near the end of October. I've got to tell you, Cal, that my recent experience using this MacBook Air, I had not experienced the benefit of something as light as this. Now, you were teasing me. Beth, I did not throw it up and down in the air. It's my daughter who lent me her Air. I just kind of pointed out. See, Gary couldn't see I was holding on to it carefully.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And Beth, he really was holding on to it. At least if I say anything different, he'll take the money back.
But what I found with that is that this huge benefit that this kind of a light device is that has a whole operating system rather than a...
scaled down
approach, and I think based on the success I think that Apple has had with the MacBook Air as a platform, now it's still, I mean, I don't see what I can't do in terms of a Mac platform. Everything I'm doing on this Air I could do on the MacBook Pro which is being rehabbed, by the way, the one that I give a little coffee to. But what I found about that is the lightness of this, the portability. Mm-hmm. You guys have often talked about, and I really hadn't done it before, sitting in front of the TV with the laptop on, doing some work and then watching some. I can do that now with this device. It's so light, but it still brings everything with it, and it brings a full keyboard as well.
Right.
That is a huge difference from trying to do something on a virtual keyboard.
Well, you know, the iPad is a great device, and it really made the tablet. And the iPad 2 was even better, and now the new iPad even better. And now you're starting to see the Galaxy, the Tab, and some of the other Android-based devices. And like I said, Microsoft's going to come out with a tablet called the Surface. I think this is just going to be
great. Well, Windows RT will be the one that comes out in the tablet form. The Surface is actually going to be a full operating system.
That's right.
But it's in tablet form, I think, with a keyboard.
And touchscreen, right?
And touchscreen,
which is on top of it. Win 8 is touchscreen compatible, and that's the difference. And I think that's just going to be great for us consumers because now you really do have three competing platforms all trying to best the other and gain, you know, a bigger share of our consumer dollars, and that's just good for consumers.
The only mix that I would put in it, Gary, is that it appears, but, you know, this is the front of the curve, so we really don't know exactly what Microsoft's going to do. It appears that the Surface is more of a business-oriented device as opposed to the Android devices or the iOS device that you just mentioned prior to that, which is more consumer point based.
I think it's absolutely true because I do believe, I really tried. I love my iPad.
I remember you had taken this in business trips.
And I did, and I can be gone for a day, but it's really hard to use it for more than a day because I postpone doing certain things I just can't do on it. So it's not really a substitute for my computer, my laptop yet.
And it shouldn't be. It should never be. Matter of fact, my opinion on this, and you know, we can differ between the two, is that a tablet does a certain types of tasks, and there are certain types of tasks that are done on a laptop, and there are certain types of tasks that are done on a desktop machine. And some of them overlay.
But
there is no one machine that's going to do it all.
I hope you're wrong because I really want to try the Surface. I think it may be a substitute for my desktop. Not in a desktop, but my laptop.
I think, Cal, that actually what Gary has said, we'll see as we progress, get deeper into October.
I mean, for example, when
October 25th.
Well, I tell you what, let's hold the conversation because we're going to take a break. And for those of you who maybe don't get the full 2 hours, get the podcast downloaded because we're going to continue talking about this in the second hour. Plus, we have some questions to answer. There are people who have sent us emails, which you can do by going to internetadvisor.net and simply clicking on that contact us button. You'll get your question in front of our eyes and we'll get your answers on the air with us during a second hour of our program. Coming up next, if you can be with us, stay with us. It's going to be a good time.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. You can find more resources to protect your computer on our webpage at internetadvisor.net.
Thank you so much for joining us for the second hour of the Internet Advisor. And thanks also for the folks behind the glass. We thank Rich Brzezinski and Annie Nichols who are there. And I think some other folks who are back helping put this program together so we can send it out to you across our radio network. And for all of you who have been faithful listeners for these many years. And with me in studio, of course, my old buddy Gary Baker, been with me for all those years. I have been with him for many of those years. You're the one constant throughout this, Gary.
It's been 15 years and counting. That's been great.
It's incredible. And also with us is Mr. Cal Carson, the man who speaks both Apple and PC.
Where else could I have so much fun for so little money?
So little money. Now, I want to talk about something, Cal, since we have you here. We've been talking in our first hour about some of the big events for Microsoft that are coming up. What I find funny is that I think that there is something rustling in the bushes there, namely an iPad Mini. that may be coming out during the latter part of October. Have you heard any rumblings?
So the rumor goes that somewhere about mid-October, the alleged, oh, I've always wanted one. Why didn't they make one this size? You know, what is wrong with Apple? Why didn't they make a 9-inch iPad?
Steve Jobs saying, I'll never do it.
Yeah. And it appears that they may just want to start, you know, rumbling around in the old Amazon Kindle Fire arena. Mm. And they alleged 7-inch iPad is supposed to be coming or announced in October for the holiday season that's coming up.
Now, and I know a lot of people have said, and Steve Jobs, when he was alive, said, you know, there's no reason to build an iPad smaller.
Right.
But, you know, if people want it, why not build it for them and get that much more of the market?
But
right?
At that time when he said that, there weren't any smaller tablets around. I've created what I wanted. You want it, buy it. If you don't.
He created a niche. Apple created a niche with the tablet. Well, you mentioned that before.
Well, there are a lot of tablets.
Pardon me, there have been tablets before.
But
you're right.
He designed one that caught the imagination of the consumer and made it successful. The others hadn't been successful
for
a lot of reasons. That Apple just got right.
The genius of Apple, I think, has been all along, is that ability of both having product and the ability to tell the story in such a way that everybody said, wow, what's that?
You know, and it's because of Steve's visionary and the way he delivered product when he brought it out and that sort of thing. That's what just made it such a wow factor. And the weird thing about it, for those who look at the calendar on occasion, October 5th, believe it or not, it's been a whole year since Steve has passed
away.
You're right.
And
it's incredible that much time has gone by.
Now, quickly, we were doing a little wrangling beforehand in the end of the first hour. We could carry over here just for a moment before we get to answering questions here. We got one coming up for Judy, who sent one in about a laptop. But we were talking about this new thing called the Surface is coming out from Microsoft, which essentially is a tablet. It will have a keyboard that can be docked with it or part of
it. It's Bluetooth. It won't be it won't be docked with it, but it'll be a Bluetooth. But it will be built into the case.
Yes.
So that's the significance.
And
it
will be a full operating system. The full Windows 8 operating system comes with it.
Not
a truncated form like the Windows RT, which will be their tablet operating system.
A different kind of tablet.
Yeah,
right.
Very different kind of. Two different things. Now, here's the question. Where do these little mini pads fall in? Like the 7-inch, the 10-inch. We talked about, you were saying,
real easy. It's real easy. It falls into the hands of the people that want them. I'm going to stick with that story.
You're going to go with that? You know, I'm almost, the more I think about it, the more we talk about it, I just think the Surface is not so much a tablet as it is a very thin computer
with
touch screen.
With touch screen.
Yes. I would agree with you entirely.
Probably is the closest tablet to a computer of any of the tablets that either are out there or will be out there in the short term.
But you talk, Gary, about taking an iPad with you and trying to make it work
as
you're traveling.
And I am not a fanboy, right?
Listens
to this,
folks,
I am not
folks,
an
these
Apple.
Two have been feuding ever since.
I am not an Apple fanboy.
I love every time you go say, I'm not an Apple fanboy. And you look over there by his desk,
but I like,
just littered with the stuff.
But I like the iPhone and I love the iPad.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
And
like that iPhone so much, even when the reception wasn't quite
and
happy,
still liked it.
But
right?
where would a mini
like what happened, but I liked the form factor.
Mini iPad fit into this for you guys? Could you see yourselves using it?
I wouldn't, because I like reading on my iPad the size that it is. I know a lot of people that would get the smaller iPad form because they like reading. They like the Kindle.
The mini.
Whatever
they're going to call it.
Right. But they like the Kindle format, that it's small enough that they can... they can slip it in places that I really have a hard time slipping the iPad into.
That's because you don't carry a purse.
That's it.
No man purse?
And I'm not saying that facetiously. I'm saying that because the Kindle and the Nook are, I think, from what I've seen around me, and it's very informal, a survey, is a device I've seen more women carry than men.
Mm.
And women want to be able to... one, read novels. They love to read.
Yep.
And number two, they want to be able to stuff that sucker in their purse easily, and the iPad won't go in quite as easily.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I've seen a lot, and I'm not sure that I could say that it's more women than men, but it's certainly, I've seen a lot of both genders with them, and it is for reading.
Well, I tend to like to look at the women a lot. Maybe that's the reason why I'm seeing a lot more
women.
Good
point. Why am I, you know, why am I surprised by that?
Well, you're collecting that data. All right. Well, I know this is a discussion that will go on and on, but let's stop for right now. We're going to come back in just a moment and start answering the questions that we've received this week. The first one is about somebody who did a little too much housekeeping on her laptop. We'll be back to answer that question or to tackle the issues involved in just a moment on the Internet Advisor. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Cal Carson on the air with you here, and delighted that you were able to make your way in. By the way, for those of you who would like to get a question in, the process is very simple. And you might be one of the folks who for many years has been, you know, you've got the bookmark there with the podcast on iTunes, and you've got the fresh program coming to you just as soon as it's posted. Or you might be just kind of finding this thing and saying, oh, a friend told me about this. I wonder what this is. You can simply go to internetadvisor.net, and you can find out all the information you need about this particular podcast. You'll find our show notes posted there, so you can look into some of the people we had in the studio. The other thing you can do is to go into the upper right-hand corner on that Contact Us button, click on that, and put your own question in. So if you're part of one of our affiliates on the Michigan Talk Network, let's say you're in Grand Rapids and you're listening to us on Sunday about the middle of the day on WJRW AM 1340, and you can simply go to internetadvisor.net, and your question will get to us, and we'll get some answers for you, and we'll both share that with you and a response to your email, and we'll also put it on the air. So please, and that's not just for the folks in Grand Rapids, but for the other folks who are listening to us throughout the state, that's where you're getting to us. All right, guys, let's talk about our first question that had come in a while back, and this was from a lady named Judy, and she was on a Dell laptop. And just to kind of read a little bit or to condense a little bit of her email, and she was doing some intense house cleaning on her laptop. And as a result, she had one of those colossal iPads. Heaven help me, I had plenty of them. They was like, oops, I didn't want to get rid of that. It happened to be the client for her wireless. And it went away. And then she says, I didn't know that I needed those for my wireless network. And she was trying to make more space for my OS. And she goes on to say, my laptop doesn't use a disk. My laptop is an Inspiron 950. When I downloaded those drivers to my other computer, do I run them and then save? And she's trying to figure out, how do I get that wireless client back onto a machine that doesn't have, apparently, a CD player on it, okay? It came without that particular thing. So there's a number of questions involved, and let's see if we can begin by pulling the first threads. And some of your thoughts initially, Cal?
Well, the first thing I would think I would do, because and I don't roam around on the Windows side of the world as much anymore, but I just thought about something. If she took those drivers mm-hmm. and tossed them into the recycle bin, if she has not emptied the recycle bin,
that's all true.
I think she could right-mouse-click on that driver, and it will restore
yes.
it back to the location
yes.
she took it from.
Matter of fact, one of the nice things about Windows versus Mac is that when you get into the trash can and find something precious in there, you simply right-click on it, and it'll go right back to the place that it was in.
I believe you can do that on the Mac, too, but I haven't tried it.
No,
so I'm
no.
Not
you got to pull
out.
It out and then find the place that was in. At least my experience. Maybe
okay.
that's because I'm clumsy. But you're right. That's one of the initial things. If it happens, something you have is, oops, I put it in the trash can. Well, if you haven't emptied the trash can, you always have an option.
Which she may not have done.
Right. Okay.
Second
so that's
of all,
a good point.
If that didn't pan out, then the second thing I would do if I was her is I would get me an Ethernet cable, and that's that little wire that looks just like a telephone cable, only bigger.
Right.
Plug it into the back of the laptop. Take the other end and stick it into the back of her router because it has four ports on the back mm-hmm. of it and probably at least three of them are open right now.
Mm-hmm.
Connect to the internet, go to the Dell website, and then put in her service tag number, which is either it's probably on the bottom
it
of her
usually,
laptop.
Yeah, wherever it, if you flip the computers over most often, you'll find it on the bottom there.
Yep.
Sometimes I think you have to, on some models, you have to take the battery out and it's behind there. But I think in general, you'll find it on the back of your computer.
Mm-hmm. And if she gets that service tag number and she puts it in, Dell will take her directly to a
right.
web page that will list the original configuration of that computer and all the drivers that were loaded on that computer at the time. She simply goes down the list, selects the one for the wireless configuration.
There you go.
Downloads it directly into the laptop, not into another machine, and then just double-click on that, let it execute itself, and it will reinstall that driver where it belongs.
Now, let's step back to that for people who may say, execute itself. I don't want to execute it. I want it. No.
Well, execute the program.
I know. I know. What Cal is saying essentially is that when you go to the Dell site, it gives you the opportunity. It identifies your exact machine.
That's right.
Through that service tag number. So that's a very important number, and it should be fairly clean. Now, sometimes you have an older machine you've had for a while, or it may have been beat up if it's a laptop and maybe difficult to find. So you can actually go look for it on the Dell website through, like she, I think, mentioned that it's an Inspiron and it's a 950, and you can go digging that way as well. And
you can try that, but you got to be careful. There are different builds and whatnot, right, exactly. So the serial number would be best.
That's a very good point.
So, yeah. What about a system restore?
Oh, there's a thought.
Hmm.
Why not?
Sure. Heck yes. Try it, right?
So she could go to...
Ed's our system restore champion.
Yeah. So she could go to Start, Accessories, System Tools, and then select System Restore and go back to a date prior to her having that problem. As a matter of fact, I go a whole month back prior to
If it shows up.
And before you take an uninstall, you never delete anything. You have to uninstall it, and you go to add and remove programs to do that. But before you uninstall, you should always back up just in case.
That's
right? Always.
Now, but let me stop there because, guys, that is a very important point. And this is why I say, folks, when we answer an email like this, we sometimes take the opportunity to answer a bunch of different things.
That's right.
And in this particular instance, before you do any kind of installation, and as a matter of fact, Cal is...
Before I uninstall or install.
Exactly. Right. And as a matter of fact, for instance, even on the Mac side, Cal was saying to me the other day, the machine that I had some problems on, he said, before you do the installation, make a full image of your drive, put it off on an external hard drive, park it there, and then once you've got it parked there, then what you can do is then proceed. Because if something fouls up, you've got that image, you can just pull back. And essentially what it is, it's the whole computer the way it looked before you started tweaking things. And that's always good.
Absolutely. Anytime you're going to do a major change of a configuration on your computer, you need to do a backup first.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then do that change.
So the method
just
you
in
said
case you need to restore. Yeah.
Now the method you said was to take the Ethernet cable, which is that cable that is a network cable, some people call.
Correct.
In a lot of cases it's blue. It could be any kind of color, but at the end it's got the old phone plugs, only it's a much bigger one. Another one might be
it's wireless. Right, and that's the problem, is she deleted her wireless adapter, so she needs to wire back to the router.
How about another solution might be to go to another computer, put that service tag number in, download it to a thumb drive, then take that thumb drive and plug it into the USB port on her computer and do the same thing that you would have told her to do before, Cal.
That's another way of doing it. I'm just going the shorter way. That's the easier way, in my opinion.
And also, thumb drive has to be fairly large.
Yes, right. Because some of those could be bigger. But, right. Nowadays, I picked up an 8-gigabyte thumb drive for, I think, $15 at the checkout counter.
You just can't do it with a 1 gig. Right?
No.
So,
good point.
So now it brings up, let's go all the way back to why would you ever have to uninstall things to make room for an OS? So, I know that many of us, and I've got my hand, I have both hands in the air when I say many of us, because I'm one, that sometimes becomes compulsive about, trying to tidy things up.
I think especially if we've been around computers for a while, because there was once upon a time, and that's not made like 2001, 2002, 2000, before we had bigger and bigger drives, where you really had to be careful. And what was happening was the software was getting bloated as these drives got bigger.
And it was more expensive. Today it is dirt cheap to get, especially now that the factories are back online and producing in Taiwan. They were flooded for a period of time for the last year or so, and the prices are...
Have you seen the prices recently?
Yeah, the prices are dropping.
They're not dirt cheap yet, but they're getting their way.
No, I think it was like $50 for 500 gigabytes.
Yeah, well, I've seen them for a gig, or for a terabyte.
Terabyte for that.
Yep, for that
the other point that I'd like to make, though, still, you do have to do a certain amount of drive maintenance on a regular basis and keep things tidy, But because the rule of thumb is to always leave 20% of that drive free.
That's an important one. Hear that, folks? 20% of your drive should be left free if you can.
If you have a 300 gigabyte drive, how many people are going to fill up 200 gigabytes?
Well, but how many kids do you have in the house?
Good point. I have a couple, but they're, one in the house now, but he has his own computer.
All right, Judy, we hope that helps you. And we'll be back to answer some more email that's come in to the Internet Advisor in just a moment. Thank you so much for joining us, or actually for allowing us to join you where you happen to be traveling. If you're one of our affiliate stations through Michigan Talk Network, or if you're just somebody who downloads us as a podcast, thank you very much for giving us the privilege of being with you. And we hope as we discuss people's concerns as they come in, that there are different things that we try to expand sometimes on the specific questions so that we can provide a whole bunch of people with some help. Like we did this last conversation, there were some specific instances there, that's how they say it in English. And then there were some broader issues that were going on there. One of the things, guys, that I thought of as we were talking about this, Gary, we have been talking about SkyDrive. You had asked me about SkyDrive before, is that when people consider cleaning up their OSs, we now have resources to be able to do this with virtual hard drives, if you will, like SkyDrive, which is in the cloud and allows us to put stuff there rather than taking up space, let's say precious space, on an older computer that may have a smaller hard drive. Let's say maybe you have a 40 gig hard drive or an 80 gig hard drive, which were monstrous at one time, but with some of the machines that are only maybe even 5 or 6 years old, that was kind of standard at that time. But now, heaven help us, some of the software packages that are out there are gobbling up gigabytes of space.
If you only have an 80 gig hard drive on your computer, then you've got more problems than the space on the hard drive. And chances are, because it's probably a 7 or 8 year old computer.
Yeah. So we have some folks who hang on to those things until the very painful end.
Yeah. They squeeze that buffalo on the nickel too. So you may want to think about. And you certainly could use an external drive. No problem. You could use something like that. If the chances are, though, that they're going to want to upgrade, that's cheaper. Yeah. It'll be about a third of the price they paid for the one they're currently using, and it'll be 5 or 6 times faster.
And have
300 gig
and
drive.
And at this time, folks, this time in the fall of 2012, with the changes that are coming, it's a great time to do that kind of shopping, because this would be a good time for not very much money, and relatively speaking, as Gary was saying, to get a huge bump in resources and performance.
You've got to be kidding, Foster.
What?
When is it not a great time to go buy some more technology, really?
Well, now, Hope, there are folks out there, who are careful with their money or don't have a whole lot, who have, very carefully been saving for these things and considering, what to do.
And if they need a note, from us to their spouse to allow them to go out and spend a little bit of money, and actually it is fairly a small amount, you could get a really nice laptop for about $400, $350, $400.
That's still the wrong way. It's always better to beg for forgiveness than ask for permission.
Are we going to get mail on that? Yeah. Ooh, that was Cal Carson that said that. Actually, folks, sometimes we get the opportunity when people send us email to call them back. We have an opportunity to talk with somebody right now and see if we can answer our question of theirs. Larry is with us from the Oxford area here in Michigan. Larry, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Well, great to be on the show. I have a tough question, though. You guys aren't going to be able to answer this one.
Fire away. The guys are ready with bated breath. I can smell it from here. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, it looks to me like someone has managed to steal my main email address, which I have published everywhere, all kinds of advertising media, and I'd like to put an end to that. But and I'm getting responses from all over the world, where it looks like
I understand
it's being passed around. Is that a common problem, or is there any way I can stop that?
Well, once you've been hit, once somebody hijacks your account, they essentially, and most of the time the objective is to get your address book that's connected with that. That's what they want. Your account is really immaterial. The address book is often the what they want.
However, they want to be able to send out through your account to those people on your address book and infect them too. So the whole idea is that You know, there, and there's many reasons for it, but a lot of times they want to be able to infect as many computers as they can. And if they send something from you to friends of yours, that your friends will say, oh, well, I'm going to accept this because it came from Larry.
That's the objective.
And that's what they're trying to do.
So
now,
what do you do now?
So take and change your password.
Okay, yes. And I did try changing the password, too, and it seems like it slowed it down. But I'm still getting responses from just about everywhere, looks like little Chinese.
Well, you know, some of that is that it's already gone out, and what happens then is they can get into somebody else's address book. Let's pretend this is going to be short. You've got 10 people on your list, okay? Then I get to crack into your system. I grab it. I want those 10 names. And if I get, let's say, I only get one-tenth. I get one person out of 10. That person's address book then gets co-opted. And suddenly I get 10 from then. You see how it works? It keeps on going geometrically after that. And, of course, there are probably more than 10 people in your address book.
I think it's like 800, and you can imagine everybody has that
that's
many,
exactly,
so it's a real
it.
Problem.
That's exactly it. And the trick is they want to use people who – and the whole thing is they want to take advantage of the trust that people have in your name, your good name. Okay. So the first thing you did was to shut down the – you changed the email address. I mean, pardon me, the password, right?
Yes, I have. Maybe I should keep on doing that.
No. But because what's happening now is kind of like that rolling effect that I said.
Okay.
Where it's not, it's no longer your email address book that's being hammered. They already have that, perhaps, and they're just working on that. Now it's the echoes of that down the line. Now, Cal, you have a thought?
This is absolutely crazy, but you know, you did mention something that is a good idea. You should change your password periodically.
Yes.
Maybe every 90 days. And make sure it's a complex password. Matter of fact, there are places on the internet where you can go and it'll show you how to create a good complex password. The other thing you might want to consider using is a tool like maybe 1Password.
Or I use RoboForm. Now, both of those are like password safes. But they also, I know RoboForm, and I think you're going to say this about 1Password, is they have a password generator in them. And you can go up to, I don't know, how many characters?
Yeah, like they can do like 128 or 256-bit encryption. So what basically it is on your end, when you use it, you may put in a password of, I don't know, let's say Annie or something like that. And then it would take that password and make an encrypted password for your mailbox that is like, you know, a bunch of special characters and numbers and dials and stuff like that, so that the people can't hack into your mailbox easily, but yet you'll be able to remember that password easily. And the tools are relatively inexpensive. I think 1Password's like maybe $39. And how much is RoboForm?
RoboForm, I think maybe some, I'm sorry, I think it may be around $40. I'll give you an example. Pardon me, I'm just looking at the generator here on RoboForm, and it gives you these options, Larry. For instance, you can use uppercase letters, you can use lowercase letters, and then you can use digits from 1 to 9, and then you can tell how many digits you want between 1 and 20. This one allows 1 and 20. And then, so, I mean, you can generate some incredibly strong passwords at that point.
Which will keep people from being able to hack your mailbox.
Yeah, it'll slow them down at very least.
Well,
you know?
And they're pretty good, right?
Yeah.
So it'll slow all but the very, very persistent hackers down.
Excellent. So changing the password and then just waiting for the echo effect to cool down.
I think to some extent, or to be very honest with you, I might even consider, guys, would you do this? I'd change providers at this point.
Why would you do that?
Well, because, for instance, let's say it was identified with let's say, Gmail. I would move to another one that it's a good one that's out there, the secure one.
He doesn't have to change providers. He could just change.
No, I meant the email. Okay.
He could just change email boxes, right?
Yeah, use my second one. Use email address. Instead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. I think that's probably what I meant.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm not even sure you need to do that. Because if you have one that people are used to, once the noise dies down, you'll be able to use it again.
Was your password very strong?
To the extent that ISPs, you know, find that your box is spamming, they may shut you down from being able to access them. You might go on a blacklist, and that would be the reason you could then go through the trouble. If you really had to have that particular email address, you could go to the trouble of getting unblacklisted, but that you have to go convince people that you have now protected yourself. Or then that would be the reason to change addresses.
Larry, how secure was the password that you had? Like, how many digits were there?
I read that actually, other than a few digits I had after, it was on the top 10 list.
Oh.
So it was my fault. I really messed up.
You see that article? Where did you see that article? Because I was listening to a commentary on that this week on NPR.
I'm not sure if I saw it in the background watching TV, but it actually appeared, and I was really
Yes, I think it was like on NPR. They were talking about that. You know, one of the top ones is like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, wasn't it, Larry?
The number one was, you hit it right on. That was the number one password.
But it was like, this was the, and they had, I don't know how many millions of passwords they had gone out and surveyed. Cal is just sagely nodding his head. Yep, that's the kind of thing gets done. But people...
Because password, let's face it, passwords are a headache for everybody.
Yep.
So they try to make it simple for themselves, but at the same time to make it simple for the hacker.
So Larry, have we given you anything you work with there?
You've done fantastic, and I know you guys are right on, because I was getting 400 responses at one time. I'm getting maybe 100 each day now. Yeah. So that echo effect is exactly what happened.
And the echoes will die down eventually. Thanks, Larry. Really appreciate you being with us here. And
thank you very much.
Stay tuned to the Internet Advisor. We've got one more. Thank you very much for being a part of the Internet Advisor and inviting us into your homes. Whether it's through your local radio station or through a podcast, by the way, we record these at our home station, which is WJR 760 AM in Detroit, and then those go on to our podcast, and usually by Sunday night, we've got those uploaded. So if you'd like to get the most current one, you simply, you can go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and you can subscribe to the RSS feed there, or you can click on iTunes, and it'll take you right to the place where you can subscribe to that particular podcast, and that way it comes to you automatically, which is a really nice thing about it. If you'd like to get the whole thing, the whole show, or you'd like to hear something that was on a particular program and you'd like to get a little more information than maybe that caught your ear as it was flying by. One of the things about the Internet Advisor is that we have not only the homepage, internetadvisor.net, but we also have a Facebook page where we try to put some things up. We have pictures of people who have been in the studio with us. We also have things like, you can get to see the whole crew. See the whole bunch of us there. Gary and Cal and Ed and Emily are in that picture as well.
It's kind of like looking at a screensaver for Angry Birds.
Never heard it described that way, but I think you may be close. In any case, it's a whole lot of fun. But one of the neat things about it is that people can ask us questions there as well. And Anne Marie came to us on that page, and she had a question for us about something that apparently had appeared on her homepage. And what's kind of interesting is she passed the link to that site on to us, and it's called www.yourtvseries. Now, what happens is, after the I in series, they put the dot. So it's ES, which I believe is the country code for Spain, I think.
We can look that up.
Would you look that up while I'm doing this here?
Sure.
Because this kind of came to us maybe a little bit at last minute, but I thought it'd be fun to look at this, because what she's saying is, or her question on that was, is this safe for me to go to? Now, when she said, someone told me about this, is it safe to use? First of all, let me just commend Anne Marie on this much, period, that she asked somebody before she clicked on it. Because social engineering of the sites that dump Trojans on your computers, or that try to, would you hear what Larry, our last listener we were talking with, they try to get in, they want to get at your information, and they do that by getting through somebody who has sent you a link that you know their name. So Cal suddenly sends me a link with your TV series in it, but it's got this strange looking little thing, and I wondered to myself, Cal, is this really you? And I can't tell you how many times I realized, nope, that wasn't Cal that sent me that. Of course, Cal is picking on you because she's sitting across from me here.
It's okay, senor. Because that country score is for Spain.
It is for Spain. Okay.
Yep, it is.
There are apparently a bunch of these different ones that have that truncated end of it. There is a legitimate site, I believe, out there called yourtvseries.com as well. So her question is, and I'm going to throw it out to you, wise advisors here, does it look like something that is safe to use? It gives itself as your TV series, free, full episodes and clips, show information, and TV listing guide.
Do you want to see the contents in Spanish?
Yeah, I could do that. I could translate it for people.
But if it's a Spanish site, chances are it's in Spanish, and that would be one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But why would you want to see it in Spanish? And if you did, then I would probably proactively go to it and not just click on it on the site, right?
Okay. So what you would say, just generally, if you see, well, first of all, if you see something broken up like this, that was my first question.
I would never.
Never touch it.
No.
When somebody fiddles with a word in
Why would they do that?
Why, right? Indeed.
To fool you.
Right. Right? Exactly.
So 99 times out of 100, the answer is to fool you.
Right, exactly.
And if they're trying to fool you, it's not because they want to giggle. It's because they want something that you have on your computer.
Now, when I clicked on that, and maybe I'm being dangerous here because I'm on a Mac. Oh, I may pay for that. But anyway, I have good protection. Anyway, it takes me to an English site that has all sorts of stuff that look like featured episodes of TV programs, and they've got other things on here. Do you think I should still proceed, even though this looks like a legitimate site?
I wouldn't do that.
Right.
Because if you wanted your TV listings and your TV series, I'd proactively go out and Google for it and get it that way,
right,
as opposed to do that from a link that an unknown source sends me.
Yeah, exactly. Right? The other thing, too,
because they do that a lot.
Yep.
It's called social engineering.
That's
or
the key.
Phishing, yeah. Right, with
this
PH.
Is, right, right. And so that's why I wanted to kind of get to this. That's the typical phishing scam.
It's usually a con.
Cal?
Really? They con people on the internet?
Yeah, go figure.
Didn't I read it on the internet?
But you're absolutely right. And even when the first page appears to be legit, the subsequent links could be the trap that they're trying to get you into.
And you know what? It might already be too late, because by opening that page, it could have downloaded its payload onto your computer. Mm-hmm. And you might think it's a legitimate site, and they might do that until, all of a sudden, it doesn't go anywhere. And you go, that was worthless, and you get off. Well, it wasn't worthless to them. They just got you.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't advocate this to everybody, but you know what I've been doing lately in order to test things like that?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than click on it on my computer, I get my older smartphone that I really don't use that much.
There you go.
And I go to the website on that because it can't infect, or at least at this time, it can't infect the phone.
And if it does, who cares, right? It's the older one.
Exactly.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, if you want, if you look at something, first of all, even if it's legitimate spam, and I don't know what legitimate spam, that sounds like an oxymoron.
Yes,
right?
I was going to say
but
that.
But even if it's spam is unsolicited email.
Right, right.
But if it's from a legitimate source, they just spammed you. They shouldn't do that, but if they did, right?
I see what you're
and
saying.
You wanted it, I would never do it because it encourages spammers.
Yep.
Right? And it tells spammers that you're gullible enough to click on things. I would say, even when I go, that's kind of, I go back in the other way, I don't click on that link. I'll go back in the other way, search for
now
it,
that's,
and then find
that's a
it
very
that
important
way.
Point. Bottom line, Anne-Marie, don't click on the link.
Yeah.
Okay. If it showed up in your box, at that point, you're not in danger at that point. Am I right?
Just delete it before you do click on it.
Right. Am I right on that, Cal? Would you say?
If you've done nothing to it. If it's something that you didn't want or you didn't ask for, then obviously someone's fishing for you in some way, shape, or form, may it be legitimate or illegitimate. And therefore, I say just pass on it by clicking on the empty trash button and just toss it.
Now, I'm guessing that Anne-Marie asked the question because, and this is how the phishing thing sometimes works, is at some time, whether it was the sites that she was looking for on Google or in some way, somebody picked up that she was interested in a reference guide to episodes of photos, et cetera, that are on. Nothing would collect that.
They picked up maybe a cookie on there where she went to a site and maybe it was for scrapbooking and they go like, oh, if it's a scrapbooking site that she went to, maybe she might want to be into this type of thing. So they do that sort of thing.
So when people sell lists, what they do is they go out and they try to make sure, first of all, that the email addresses that are on the list are legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't get a bounce back right away, it could be legitimate, But if they, more than that, if they get somebody that clicks on it, not only do they know it's legitimate, they know that somebody at the other end clicks on spam. Mm. You go on the A list. Boy, they sell your email address all over the internet.
That's the point. They sell your.
You are a big target because you're gullible.
You're not only in trouble with them. I mean, they'll become
anybody
they sell it to, and that's the terrible part about it.
Sometimes that's all they want is to sell that list. They want to find out if you're gullible enough.
That's it. So, Anne-Marie, I hope this helped you, and we are going to be sending this little segment of our program on to you so you can hear this as well. Thank you very much for all of you who have gotten in touch with us, and once again, thanks for downloading this program and for listening to us on your favorite station, wherever that may be. My name is Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Cal, thank you so much for being here with me. Annie and Rich and George, thank you so much as well for being behind the glass and helping to make this program work. We will see you in a week. Thanks so much for being with us.
You've been listening to a podcast of the second hour of WJR's Internet Advisor. To hear previous podcasts, visit our webpage at internetadvisor.net.